You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
This is MLB.com Extras, Kansas City Royals edition. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, joined by Dick Cagle, and talking about those AL champion Kansas City Royals here in the midst of the hot stove season. It's been a quiet winter so far here in the very early going for the Royals, kind of the feeling out process for them and a lot of teams right now. DK, just speaking in generalities here, do you get a sense of what their first order of business might be here? I'm sure it's incumbent on some other dominoes falling elsewhere, but just knowing the hole in rotation and the couple holes in the lineup, is there one spot in particular that you think they're going to be really aggressive on?
Yeah, I think looking for a starting pitcher is going to be the first priority. They need somebody to fill in that hole that James Shields is going to leave. So they're going to look at some of the, I think, more or less the second tier of starting pitchers. I don't think they're going to be in the John Lester, James Shields, Max Scherzer level. I think those fellows are going to be out of their price range. But further on down, there's some reliable pitchers out there, I'm sure, that they can zero in on. Who they'd be, I'm not quite sure, but they're looking.
Well, we know, Irvin Santana, their old buddy, is tied to a compensation draft pick, which it could hurt his market again here this winter, just like it did last year. Is there any, do you think there's any potential for a reunion there if the price is right?
Yeah, sure. If the price is right, there's no doubt there would be potential there. Irvin really enjoyed his stay in Kansas City. He was a real likable guy. Beyond that, of course, he pitched very well. He's a good, solid pitcher. He grinds out innings. He's a good competitor, and he's kind of a lighthearted spirit around the clubhouse. He probably doesn't come off that way to the public, but he really is a good natured kind of guy. And I think the Royals would like to have him back. They certainly enjoyed having him around, and as I say, he pitched very well for them. So better than his record indicated, actually, much better. So yeah, I think
Oh, go ahead. He was obviously fantastic for them in 2013, and then, turning down that qualifying offer really hurt him. And ended up getting the same amount he would have gotten with the Royals, with the Braves. Didn't have quite the seamless transition to the National League, but you also got to factor in that the season started a little late, missing most of spring training and whatnot. But he's an intriguing option. And then another guy, DK, who I think we mentioned him on every one of these podcasts for every team, just because every team's kind of willing to kick the tires on a buy low starting pitcher who used to used to provide upwards of 200 innings. But Justin Masterson, the Royals have been linked to him as just kind of checking in on him and maybe looking into the medicals there. I did note though that he has an ERA over 5 in his history at Kauffman Stadium. I don't know if that would impede the Royals thinking at all on Masterson, but is he a guy you think might be a fit?
Yeah, absolutely. He pitched pretty well against them, I think, in Cleveland, memory serves. Probably not at Kauffman Stadium, but I don't know why he wouldn't be effective in Kauffman Stadium. Kauffman Stadium is pretty kind to most pitchers, but
right.
Yeah, Masterson would certainly be a name out there that the Royals would consider.
You think, when you look at their bullpen, and then they're keeping the key cogs in the bullpen together, Kelvin Herrera is arbitration eligible as a Super 2, but another couple arbitration eligible guys, Aaron Crow and Tim Collins, I've seen them listed in some places as maybe non-tender candidates, but it also seems like the Royals value the depth they provide. Any read on those two guys? Do you think they'll be tendered contracts?
I think so. I think it'll be tendered contracts, yeah. Aaron Crow had a bad last 6 weeks, and he admits that. That's why he wasn't on the postseason roster. But he says that, you know, the fact that he was not on the postseason roster is going to be a big motivator for him in spring training. And Timmy Collins, of course, spent most of his season down in Omaha trying to tune up his repertoire and mostly throwing strikes. That was his primary problem, and he seems to have done that, and he won a spot on the postseason roster. So they thought enough of him to put him on that roster. So I think both of those kids will be tendered. Of course, I've been wrong before.
We all have, DK, especially in this business. But the Royals, these arbitration cases primarily because of that, and then we'll see what they do from the outside. But they could get in that $100 million payroll range for next season. It's very conceivable. They were in the, I believe, the mid-90s last year, so things are kind of trending upward. But I don't think that means they go crazy in free agency. I know they're – again, like many teams, they've looked into Yasmani Tomas, the power-slugging Cuban outfielder. It sounds like they've done their due diligence on him, but would you label him as probably doubtful for this club?
I'd say doubtful, yeah. That sounds to me like he's going to get an awful lot of money, and
right.
I don't know that the Royals are willing to go that far. I really haven't heard too much about his hitting exploits down in those tryouts, but he's supposed to be pretty good.
He's got power. If you got power, you're going to make money, that's for sure. And on that note, Billy Butler, you know, his power was down this past year, and he's in this crowded designated hitter market. There was one report that he got a 3-year, $30 million offer from the Orioles, but that was kind of instantly refuted by the Orioles by Dan Duquette. I'd have to imagine you get a 3-year, $30 million offer in this market if you're a DH just after Victor Martinez. You might want to take that one while you can get it. But with Butler, it seems like the Royals are in a good spot where they can really be patient and let that market develop, and maybe Butler will fall to them at a discount, or maybe one of these other guys will fall to them at a discount.
Yeah, that's true. Billy loved Kansas City. Kansas City seemed to love Billy, and I think there's a reciprocal admiration agreement there. Even if they don't sign Billy, I think what they do with that spot would be kind of a revolving door kind of thing. A guy like Salvador Perez, who ended up, I think, starting 158 games behind the plate this year. Kind of a postseason. Certainly could use a rest, maybe a week or so, one day a week or so in that DH spot. They've got other guys who, while you hate to take them out of their defensive positions, even for a day, they might benefit. Even Alex Gordon maybe could benefit by being in that slot a day or two once in a while. So I think that's a possibility. One of those, kind of a make it a DH, kind of a transitional zone there for him. But they might be able to sign a kind of a part-time DH, maybe a veteran player who might be a platoon type guy or something like that that might fit in there too. So I think. I think there are certainly options there to Billy Butler, that's for sure.
Yeah, the need for flexibility there. You mentioned Perez. That's a great point because this guy had a historic workload this year. He started 143 games at catcher, started another 15 games in the postseason. Then he goes off to Japan, and he's got even more of a workload. I know the guy loves to play and loves to catch, but, geez, that's really that's piling a lot on the young man.
And the funny thing is, he'll probably end up playing in the games down in Venezuela in the Winter League.
Yeah.
Well, last year they kind of fended off his desire to catch down there and said, "No, why don't you learn to play first base?" And I think he played first base most of the time down in Venezuela and maybe caught once a week or something like that. But
yeah.
They're kind of watching Salvador. You know, he's got a history of he had knee surgery, and those legs take a pounding. And you could see it, I think, in the second half. He wasn't, I mean, he's not the greatest runner in the world, but he was running a little slower than usual, I think,
yeah.
The second half.
DK, I don't know about you, but I was pretty surprised Ventura finished sixth in the Rookie of the Year voting. I thought he'd be substantially higher than that. If I had a ballot, I'm not saying he would have won it because Jose Abreu was clearly the top Rookie of the Year candidate in the American League, but I think he was definitely in the top three for me.
Absolutely.
Was that
absolutely
surprised to you as well?
Three, yes. That would have been my vote. He would have been one, two, or three, certainly. Well, but probably
yeah.
One because of Abreu's outstanding season, but yeah, Giordano. I mean, he pitched a ton of innings. He 14 game wins, the tie for the club lead on a championship team, and wow, he was just all over the place. And you know, there was some concern there for a while about his elbow and the shoulder or whatever, but he came through that. Just fine. There was no stopping that kid. He had a great year. There's no doubt about it. He should have been higher than six. I agree with you, Anthony.
Well, we agree. We got to get in the voters' heads, I guess. I don't know what was going on there. It was a deep class, though, no doubt. It was deep in the much deeper in the American League than the National League. But one last thing, DK. The Rays are looking for their next manager to replace Joe Maddon. They've got an extensive list of candidates, and probably not surprisingly, given the Royals' success this year, but two of those guys are Royals, or guys who were with the Royals this past year, Raul Ibanez and Don Wakamatsu. Now, we've talked before about Ibanez and his impact on this club and the veteran presence, and he was just a great addition midseason. But Wakamatsu, I don't know if he gets enough credit for just how intelligent he is and how much he helps these guys prepare. What was your take on, or what is your take on him and his role as bench coach to Mr. Yost there?
Oh, well, he had a tremendous influence on the season this year. You know, Locke is kind of a quiet guy, a very congenial guy. He doesn't make much noise around the clubhouse or even on the field or anything, but he's there. And the second half of the year, after Pedro Grifol became catching coach instead of hitting coach, he also became another kind of a assistant bench coach voice for Ned Yost. Ned Yost really leaned on Wakamatsu and Grifol and of course his pitching coach and hitting coaches and all these guys. He really listens to them, what they have to say, and that Ned admits that in his earlier days of managing in Milwaukee, and he didn't maybe listen to his coaches as much as he should. But now he really really takes what they have to say into account. He takes the consensus of his coaches, and obviously that worked real well for him this year.
That's the double-edged sword of success, as you have this success, but then other teams want to poach your guys sometimes. So
yeah,
we'll see how that shakes
out
right. With the Rays.
Either one of those guys, Raul or Wak, would obviously be great choices for him.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's an interesting list they've compiled, but those two guys strike me as very attractive candidates. So we'll see what happens there and see what happens with the Royals here going forward this winter. I want to thank Dick Cagle for joining us. I want to thank you all for tuning in. It's been MLB.com Extras.
Visit the official online shop of Major League Baseball at MLB.com/shop for the largest selection of authentic caps, T-shirts, jerseys, hoodies, collectibles, and more. Get your gear straight from the source, the MLB.com shop.